friends. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, coming to you from not our usual place. We are on the road in the Czech Republic. Time here is about 7 p.m. in the evening on Friday, about 10 a.m. in the morning back home on the west coast of California. Producer Robbie is back in the studio, and I am here at my hotel. And the show must go on, regardless of where we are at. Here is the scoop. As far as the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing goes, sometime today, they may have already had it, there's going to be a procedural vote in the Senate to carry forward a motion to have the vote then held effectively tomorrow. So what happens was the vote was scheduled for 10:30 a.m. on Friday. Today, the Senate meets, and then they vote to basically conclude any debate and move forward on a vote. And then that begins the clock ticking. A lot of people are asking, I thought the vote was today, Friday, Sam. And it's not. The vote, if everything goes well, would be tomorrow. Now, does this matter? What does it mean? How is it shaping up? And Sam, did you bring your crystal ball with you to Prague? All of these things I will get to in due course. First of all, the longer that this circus goes, the worse it is for the Democrats. I have not seen in a long time something blow up so spectacularly in their faces. Now, if you're listening to this program today, or if you'll be listening tomorrow, you'll realize you've probably already heard. The FBI investigation, without which so many Democrats and even some Republicans refused to move forward. They had to have the FBI go in and investigate. Now, what did they find? A big, giant box of nothing. The FBI went in, of course, and did what they do. They went to people who could corroborate Ford's statement. And they went to people who could corroborate Judge Kavanaugh's statement. This is what they do. They already have Ford's testimony under oath, written out in transcript form. So they don't need to ask Ford. That's the latest smoke and mirrors tactic. Well, the FBI did not interview Dr. Ford. They don't need to. They already have her testimony. It's signed, sealed, and delivered. They got it on paper under penalty of perjury. What they need to do, what the FBI presumably did, and in very careful order, went through and found all the people that were out there that supposedly could corroborate what she was testifying to. Now, what ended up happening is there just was no corroboration. People who walked out of the meeting, remember this, these documents, these reports that the FBI issued on each of their interviews, were put into a locked, sealed, secure room for just such a purpose that they have in the Senate building there. And so senators were allowed to go in and view those documents only there. Now, why is that? Well, of course, because the Democrats would have immediately leaked these reports if they were given the opportunity to take them to their offices or take them home and so forth and so on. So they were forced to go in, view the documents there in the secure location. They'd walk out and the press corps was gathered breathlessly waiting to hear what people were saying. And, yes. What is it? And the Republicans all came out and says, "Well, there's nothing there. There's nothing I can see that's corroborating anything." And the Democrats were all like, "This was, they didn't talk to Dr. Ford, and this is a if Bob Menendez. What do you see? What he said? You know, this is if this is a FBI investigation, then it's BS. They have nothing." And it's all plainly invisible. So what'll happen now? What this means, plain and simple, is it might just be what it takes to get those few people who've been on the fence to change their minds. we're talking about Murkowski. She's the senator up in Alaska. Collins, senator, Republican senator from Maine. And, of course, the notorious F-L-A-K-E, Senator Flake. Gosh, can you imagine? Do you think, what if Flake doesn't do this, if he is a no vote on Kavanaugh, I even have some serious concern about his post-congressional career. You know he's leaving. He's gone. He knows he could never get reelected. The people of Arizona, his approval ratings were so dismal, and he was polling so low, he didn't even attempt to stand for reelection. But he still is going to be at the mercy of his vast network of donors and political contacts to cobble together a post-Senate career. This is how it works. Oh, I got a lesson on how it works last night. Oh, my God. Oh. All right, so now, let me just digress here for a minute. Politicians, when they leave office, they suddenly need a new job. They need a new career. And that career is not always automatic. This is what Flake has to consider, right? He's got to consider, you know, his standing with all the people, the wealthy donors that have given him money, who presumably would be the people to help him establish himself either as a lobbyist or as some kind of a business liaison, some kind of role. They all are pressuring him. I promise you right now, they're pressuring him to vote yes on Kavanaugh. I have a friend who is a big donor in Arizona. Says that he's texting Flake and telling him, you have got to vote yes. And is that enough to sway him? I don't know. Flake is swayed by crazy women shouting at him in elevators, so I don't know if he's listening to text from his political donors. But nonetheless, last night at my hotel here in Prague is a guest. And I really, oh, well, if you're in LA, you know who I'm talking about. I'll start the story off slowly. There is a guest who has exited the political stage relatively recently. And so I'm at the receptionist. I'm picking something up. I needed to get a duplicate room key because I locked it in the room, and I'm standing at the desk and I'm waiting to have a new key made. And I hear a guy next to me asking the receptionist, if the person at the desk, a hotel employee, if you needed a visa to visit the Czech Republic. Now, I'm in Prague. This is the Czech Republic. And presumably, if you got into the country to begin with from the outside, you would know what it took to get you there. He's not asking if you need a visa if you're visiting from Uzbekistan. He says, hey, will I need a visa? And the woman looked at him like he was insane. At that moment, out of the corner, I turn my head around. And it's Antonio Villaraigosa, former mayor of Los Angeles. I couldn't believe my eyes. He's here. He's in my hotel. So last night I'm having a drink at the bar, and I end up having three drinks because I am so captivated by a conversation. He comes in with another couple, him and his ladybird that he's with, come in with another couple, and they're an older couple. It seems like they're from the South. I think I heard they're from New Orleans, and they have this long, drawn-out conversation about his career. Hearing Antonio Villaraigosa talk up his career in L.A. is probably one of the funniest things I have ever eavesdropped on. Robbie, you missed it, man. We should have been here together because, oh, he thinks he's the cat's meow. Yeah, and by the way, the thing is he's immediately hitting these people up for connections because they asked him, well, what's next? And he says coyly that he's Now he's just focused on being a private citizen. And I think to myself, I go, this is code. This is what all the people, every person who leaves government has to think about what their transition is. Most people do not have some business or endeavor that they immediately step back into. And when you're stupid and basically dumb as a box of rocks, like Antonio Villaraigosa, it becomes a more difficult problem. You know, he had a couple of those no-show jobs fizzle out on, and people pay him money for connections, but he's not that connected of a guy. And so he is left to basically doing a little song and dance for these old Democrats on some tour visiting world, you know, European capitals, schmoozing them in an effort to see what he can do. There's a lot more to it. I'll maybe give you some more details later, but absolutely hilarious stuff. And this is exactly what the guys that are leaving the Senate have to contend with. Flake's still a young guy. What's he going to do? I do not see him voting no. I especially do not see him voting no when you consider that his threshold for a yes, his condition for accepting and voting a yay on the Kavanaugh nomination was to have that FBI investigation come back with a clean bill of health for Mr. Kavanaugh. So if that comes through, I do not see this in any way, shape, or form. I do not see him voting it down. Now, judicial temperament. You've heard this quite a bit. Well, of course. First we had a rapist, a molester, a rapist, and a serial predator of women, Brett Kavanaugh. And as those stories began to sort of unravel, you had a new line of attack, and that was that we had lies from Judge Kavanaugh under oath related to his lack of drinking, and also that he lacked the judicial temperament required to be a Supreme Court justice. The idea of the drinking thing is laughable. If you actually review his testimony, there's nothing there that is there's no perjury, even if you accept half of what some of these anti-people are saying. What's more interesting to me is the question of judicial temperament. And it's not what you think. Temperament, when we talk about, you know, when you talk about your ladies, when you talk about your husband's temperament, what are you referring to? You're talking about how pissed off he gets, right? You're talking about him, perhaps, you know, having a short fuse when he comes home from work, and has the kids come at him full force. I'm not talking from experience or anything, but that's what you're talking about. Judicial temperament is something different. Judicial temperament has nothing to do with you being quick to anger. It has everything to do with your ability to be fair and balanced with whatever legal issue is in front of you. So you cannot be an activist, you cannot be an ideologue. Your judicial temperament requires you to be dispassionate. And passion here does not mean, again, how angry you get. Dispassion in this context, when it's related to judges, has to do with you being fair. Does that make sense? Everybody's got this all wrong. The Senate here is supposed to advise and consent and find a judge that's going to be fair. And they have moved the goalposts so far over that now they're getting into the fact of how emotional Judge Kavanaugh got when he got accused of being a gang rapist. So that is, I think, what prompted today's Wall Street Journal post or editorial written by Judge Kavanaugh, where he doesn't apologize for anything. And that's absolutely correct. Never apologize to Democrats. It's a losing proposition. But he does say, you know, I may have been a bit too emotional. That is what all this judicial temperament stuff is. And him writing that editorial clearly was approved by the White House, was approved by the people that are are shepherding his nomination through the Senate. Presumably is something that Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, wanted to have happen, because this would not have, you know, again, he had permission and he had instruction from people that are very intimately involved with this process. And to that end, guys, I think what we have here are careful maneuvers designed to assuage these senators that remain on the fence: Murkowski, Collins, and Flake. All right, when we come back, a little bit about Lindsey Graham. He is on fire. Man on fire, Lindsey Graham. Oh my gosh, wait till you hear what he said on CNN. And I'll tell you a little bit about Prague here and give you a little rundown on the city. I know I've done the show from here before. I did a number of live shows back on the station that shall not be named. And we always had fun with those. I know you all, those of you who have been listening for a while, know that, remember those traveling programs that we did all over the world. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation radio program.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
And we are back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here in Prague in the Czech Republic, conducting secret meetings, not with Michael Cohen or any of Donald Trump's attorneys. You remember that little tidbit about how Michael Cohen supposedly, this is early on in the Trump-Russia investigation, supposedly had a clandestine meeting here in Prague with Russian agents. Can you imagine, now that you guys actually know, we all know, I'll have a better idea of who Michael Cohen is. Can you imagine him doing anything clandestine? I don't know, it's crazy. But here, briefly, well, let me ask you something about this demand, this Democrat demand that the FBI to fully investigate these Kavanaugh allegations, that they also include interviews with Dr. Ford. You've heard a number of senators on the record talk about that, saying, look, this wasn't a real investigation. The FBI was handcuffed by Donald Trump's White House and prevented from interviewing Dr. Ford. And I submit to you an interesting idea or a thought. What could come from that interview other than pain and problems for Dr. Ford? In other words, whenever you give, it's very dangerous to give testimony and then to subsequently give at a later date testimony on the same subject again. And when speaking with the FBI, of course, it's under penalty of felony. You can't lie to a federal agent. So it's effectively the same thing as testifying under oath. And it would be Dr. Ford this week speaking to them about the same events that she testified about a couple weeks back to the Senate Judiciary Committee. The risk you always run, every good lawyer, and you know, I on some days count myself in that group of people, every good lawyer will tell you, do not let your client testify if you can avoid it. And if you do, one of the bigger things generally happens if you have to give a deposition and then later the client testifies in open court, you've got to absolutely make sure that they don't contradict themselves, because it opens up enormous credibility issues and potentially criminal liability. Here, it is astounding to me, astounding, that her attorneys, that Christine Blasey Ford's lawyers, are there pounding their fist, demanding that their client be interviewed by the FBI to have her heard. And the reason this is so incredibly unbelievable to me is their demand only does a disservice. There's only downside for their client, right? Blasey Ford, Dr. Ford has given her account of what happened to the Senate Judiciary Committee. By all accounts, she did pretty good, right? Remember when she testified, everybody said, Kavanaugh better hit it out of the park because this testimony was good. So when you deliver good testimony 1 week, 2 weeks later, the only thing you can do is give the same performance, or alternatively, give a worse performance, or give a different performance, which would only serve to discredit your account. And this is my point about this entire process. These lawyers that she has, they're not out there. They're not looking out for Dr. Ford. The people, the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee, they're not looking out for Dr. Ford. The Democrats in the Senate, the Democrats on TV, the Democrats everywhere that are screaming about having her be re-interviewed by the FBI and the Trump administration is obstructing justice or obstructing the truth from coming out vis-a-vis Judge Kavanaugh. All of these people, they are willing to risk Blasey Ford getting nailed for perjury because they want Kavanaugh knocked out in this process. They care about that more than they care about the victim. So every time, I'm telling you, every time you hear these people talk high and mighty about how much they care about the victim, how much they care about protecting survivors of sexual assault, it is BS, as Lindsey Graham would say, but he'd use the real word. I'll tell you about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski here in Prague, in the Czech Republic, as they say here, dobrý den, which means good day, a handy Czech phrase. I think another, that's whenever I have my friends here come from the States, they want to know all the useful terminology. So dobrý den means good day. And this is formal. You can use it, you know, in a restaurant. But I guess if you're Brett Kavanaugh, the most important word or phrase is pivo prosím. I'll have a beer, please. So there's that to file away for your pocket dictionary in the event that you end up in the Czech Republic and need to order a beer. The Devil's Triangle. Did you hear about that? That's the drinking game that they're playing. And the Democrats, the media was calling it some sort of sex thing. You know the reason why all these Democrats are trying to make Brett Kavanaugh's, you know, various, you know, stories into way more than they are is because these people are all sick perverts themselves. They hear Devil's Triangle. Oh, that reminds me of something we did last night. And Kavanaugh's he's a choir boy. He's a total choir boy. You know, the mittens. The mittens are off for Lindsey Graham. He's on CNN, and they're needling him about working with Trump. I mean, how can you work with Trump? This guy is so awful. He's so terrible. He's such a despicable human. How can you, Lindsey Graham? You're a good man. You're a reliably bipartisan Republican, or at least were before this Brett Kavanaugh thing. Why can't you understand that working with Trump is like collaborating with Hitler? And Lindsey Graham got this pissed off look on his face. And I'm telling you, on TV, and I don't think they caught it. I don't think they caught the bleep because he says, well, listen, if you if you don't like me working with the president on objectives that are good for this country, well, then I don't give up. And he said it. He said the word. He said the word that in German would be Scheiße. The Czech word. I don't even want to say the Czech word. It's better to use the language I don't know. Anyway, so there we go. That's what happened. And he's been feisty all over television. He did a bit on Laura Ingraham on Fox. And listen, Graham is smart. He understands this, right? He understands viscerally that the mood has shifted on this Kavanaugh fight. He's capitalizing off of it. Don't misunderstand. There is an element of political opportunism here. But you ought... I always try to make this program about giving you an insight into something that really no one else is getting at. Because the media right now, they want to talk about Lindsey Graham as a guy who's gone full... You know, he's gone full MAGA Republican, right? He's become a full Trumpist. And they write long pieces about, well, now, you know, now that McCain's died, you know, he's lost his anti-Trump boyfriend and he's listless and he doesn't know what's going on. And this is him struggling and trying to find a voice. No, it's all wrong. You've got the wrong analysis again. The right way of seeing this is that you've got a career politician who is whip smart, and he is sensing a shift out there that no one in the mainstream media can even put a finger on, let alone grasp in any way, shape, or form. And what he's understanding is that this attack on Kavanaugh is so off-putting to middle America that it is actually driving up tremendous interest and activity and excitement on the right, presumably from a group of people, let's say we'll call them moderate Republicans, right? Moderate, sort of not full in for Trump Republicans who were definitely, I don't know, 80% and 85% certain to sit out the midterms. Yeah, they didn't like Trump. They didn't. They maybe don't care about the candidate that's up for office. And whatever, they're out. And these people are now invigorated because it's no longer about Trump. The whole argument now has shifted, and the Democrats, for all their demagoguery, all of their political machinations, disgusting opportunism run amok, has shown itself and revealed itself, and it's all absolutely coming undone. Case in point, they found out the FBI went to all the people that Blasey Ford had on her list as corroborating witnesses, and so now again these witnesses on the record were forced to make statements, and none of them corroborated the story. Yeah, and you had that one friend, Leland Kaiser, right? She was one of the people who was a corroborating witness. I don't know. Do we know if it's a male or a female? This Leland Kaiser. I'm presuming it might be a male, actually. Changed her testimony on it. And she was one of the corroborating witnesses. Her testimony changed. Added something about how, well, you know, I don't recall any of this, but it could very well be true. That was the only addition that she made. It's not material in any way. But apparently she'd been pressured from a former FBI agent who also is really good buddies with Dr. Ford. They hang out. There's a former FBI agent. And this is one of the connections there to the whole idea about Dr. Ford having some training in polygraph tests and apparently had been coaching some people. This whole thing is beginning to fall apart, and I'm excited. I'm excited to see it. Well, I'll read you the letter. Grassley, the judiciary chairman, has sent a letter to Ford and her attorneys, And in it, he's asking for something really specific. I'll give you my legal take on it, because I think it's a problem. It's a problem for them. And it gives us some idea of where, you know, what happens here, because this is not going to just die, I think, with Kavanaugh getting voted in. I think the Republicans are absolutely furious and pissed and a smell a rat. And they're on the path for something. And there's something on the second page of this letter I want to share with you. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. I'll be back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
This just in to the Sam Nation News Desk. Senator Murkowski from Alaska, she has declared that she will be a no vote, a no on Brett Kavanaugh. Now, I'll tell you, one of the things that she added in her statement was that she too has had a Me Too moment in her life. And what boils my blood about this is the idea that the left and all of these Republicans have literally lost their minds. Murkowski has lost her mind, because saying, look, I've had a Me Too moment and I believe one woman against a slew of witnesses that are her friends that all deny it happening. Is this idea, is this concept here that we have to punish Kavanaugh, not because he's been proven to be a sexual assaulter of women, but is this somehow some sort of sacrifice for all male sin that has occurred, legitimately, whether truthfully or not, to women in the past, elsewhere, in unrelated matters? You know, this is North Korea level nonsense. Okay, in North Korea, you know, if you commit a crime against the regime, they go out and they arrest your parents and grandparents, and they go through three generations of your family. Guilt by association, and this is what it is like. This is not America. You don't say, look, hey, I've been a victim of sexual assault, and I'm just not comfortable with Brett Kavanaugh. Because why? What's your rationale for that? I have to tell you, this is absolutely insanity. The New Yorker wrote a piece where they claim that Brett Kavanaugh weaponized crying. Hear about this? They weaponized crying. The Democrats have been weaponizing hysteria. This is what they do. I mean, this is how they operate. What do you think the pink pussy hat crowd is all about? My goodness. But you've got somehow, Brett Kavanaugh, by being genuinely upset about being called a rapist and other horrible things, being somehow out of sorts they said it was like a little boy that had gotten himself into trouble. And this is, of course, the exact thing right there. So you level an accusation against somebody that is total rubbish, and not only total rubbish, right? It's not like, you didn't pay your rent 10 years ago, but it's something that is tremendously injurious to his reputation and deeply personal, because it goes to the heart of his character. And you expect, right, he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. It's a setup. If Kavanaugh weren't upset, what would all the headlines read? Suspicious, don't you think? Kavanaugh is not upset, doesn't seem to be that bothered by this. What's he hiding? And when he comes out swinging, emotional, and mad, what's the argument? Well, he's what's seems a bit theatrical, right? Seems a bit rehearsed. And Dr. Ford's testimony, by contrast, was so real, so genuine, so wonderful. Can't help but believing her. You guys, we are not talking about, friends, we're not talking about an assault that happened in a dark alley. This thing happened at a party where there were other people present. This is not a he said, she said deal. This is she said, they said. And no one, not even people from her own circle of friends, are giving this any credibility or any merit. Murkowski is dead to me. I'm telling you, this is so unbelievably sick. I have no words for it. And those of you who live up in Alaska, you have this shame on your hands. So look, where does it go from here? Well, if there's a couple of other votes that matter. Bob Corker, he was an anti-Trump guy, really one who was somebody we were watching a little bit. But he has again reiterated that he is voting for a yes on Kavanaugh. You also have a wild card here, a wild card with Joe Manchin, because he is up for a re-election right now. In a deep red West Virginia. Let me tell you the timing of this, because we started the program kind of going over what the procedures would be, and it looks like there's going to be a vote on Saturday. The timing here, forcing Democrats and Republicans who are in perilous re-election situations, which of course Murkowski isn't. She's not up for re-election. But there's a number of seats where you truly have the incumbents are vulnerable, and they both need, certainly in Manchin's case, Trump carried the state by 40 points. He's in Trump country. And I've seen the polls have definitely been tightening. So let me tell you how this what this means about timing, right? Timing right now has shifted from being on the side of the Democrats to being on the side of Republicans. I will explain this when I come back. We're going to do today, because we're on the road, we're going to do a slightly abbreviated program. So I will finish this out, give you a full update on Kavanaugh, and then we will call it a show. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rzhovsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rzhovsky, welcome back. We are here in the Czech Republic, in Prague, the capital of the country. I promised I was going to give you a little bit about the city. I know I've talked about it before when I've done the show from here. This is the town, the city where both of my parents were born. My first time to Prague was in 1989, just after Christmas. And the country itself was just weeks past its Velvet Revolution, which saw the toppling of the Bolshevik Soviet regime here that had been in power for 40 years. I remember being on a train from Switzerland. It was crowded, full of people who were very happy, who had been living abroad and visiting their homeland for the first time in many, many years. So I remember that enthusiasm here as a young man of a country that was finally free and people who were grateful to simply have very basic freedoms, freedoms that I think many of us, especially in the U.S., take for granted now. Freedom of speech, freedom to practice a religion of your choosing, freedom of assembly, right? The ability to get together, for example, with fellow lunatic activists and go accost your senators, yelling at them in elevators. You think for a minute, all of you Democrats that enjoy, have borrowed, right, Saul Alinsky, where do you think Saul Alinsky came up with this nonsense? He was a student of communist Russia. He understood how the Soviets did business, how the Bolshevik revolutionaries seized power and merely repackaged it, dressed it up, gave it a touch of modernity, and sold it to Obama, Barack Obama's generation, and even now, these young people, millennials, are buying this horse crap. Anyway, so the idea, can you imagine, right, is the idea that in 1987, if you didn't like, if you were Czech, you know, if you were living here and didn't like that, you know, the government was arresting people for, I don't know, speaking out against, or you could go to Parliament and go yell at them. Oh my God. You'd end up in a work labor camp. Gee, I mean, people don't understand. This world where freedom truly did not exist, that world was here in the place where I today am sitting doing this program and able to share my opinion regardless of fear of retribution. It's a powerful thought, and one that we should all remind ourselves of. Now, Prague is a fantastically beautiful city that was, for the most part, untouched during the war. They did lose some buildings here, but not a city that had really suffered too much destruction, and also a city that, for a long period of time during the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was a significant city, but not the capital. I always explain what this means functionally is that when you have a capital city, like, for example, in Vienna, where it was the capital of the country at the time, what they do is they in building up an appropriately august home for the seat of an empire, they clear out all these old clutter in an effort to build beautiful big boulevards and big squares and statues and fountains and the like. But what are they clearing out? They're clearing out all the clutter that they're getting rid of are beautiful old Baroque and Rococo buildings, Rococo period buildings that are extremely charming. And Prague has a very preserved old town. And you have these beautiful crooked streets here and large cobblestones that are awkward. You gotta actually wear good shoes here. I went out in my dress shoes earlier and I was getting them caught on the cobblestones. You gotta be careful. But you got these giant old cobblestones and tight little streets where you barely have a little, you know, sidewalk to walk on and you know, cars, you know, where they're one-way streets. You can't even fit two cars abreast. It's not going to happen. So you know you got these little streets, and at night the most magical thing here, everything has this kind of a pale yellow glow, all the lamps that they use here, and so you get these truly magical shadows that spread across these little crooked streets and around corners. It's a magical city. And anybody that's been here has been touched by it. So if you ever get a chance, it's a fantastic place to visit. And hey, you might run into Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, as I did downstairs yesterday, and can be regaled by his stories of successes. What did he get? Four trees? Five trees. There were five trees in Los Angeles he planted, and by the sound of it last night, virtually single-handedly. So yeah, there there it is. All right, we have now word that Senator Flake is a yes vote. Mind you, minutes ago, there was that procedural vote in the Senate, and the procedural vote was 51-49. Murkowski voted against, and Manchin, I was just telling you about this. See, I do know what I'm talking about. Manchin voted for. Now, it's not the final vote, But it's a vote that now triggers the actual full vote. So Manchin, look, if he wanted to shut it down, he would do what Murkowski did, and he'd vote nay on it. Collins, Susan Collins of Maine, another one of the wobblers we talked about, was an aye. She voted yes. So we will see. And apparently, now it's being reported sometime this afternoon, Eastern time, there she will give a statement on how she will vote for the nomination itself tomorrow afternoon. Now, her vote, right, would tie it if she wobbles back to a nay for whatever reason. Remember, that ties it at 50-50. Mike Pence, the vice president of the United States, serves as a president, technically president of the Senate, and he can come in and cast a tie-breaking vote. It's a squeaker, that's for sure. So when I was saying, did I bring my crystal ball? I didn't. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know how this is going to go. I do think in the end, though, I find reassuring that people who are close to the process are being cautiously optimistic. And one of the reasons they're being optimistic, in my view, is the question of timing. The timing of this right now, I was just explaining earlier, how it has moved from favoring the Democrats. It has moved from favoring obstruction to favoring Republicans in the pro-Kavanaugh crowd. And the reason for this is the election, the dreaded midterm election, is just, what, 4 weeks away, plus minus a couple days. And when you look at these races, when you look at the Senate map, right, the Senate map, the battle for the Senate, you've got about 44 Dem seats that are either safe or not up for re-election, and you have 48 GOP seats that are safe or not up for election. And that puts roughly eight races somewhere in the middle. And these eight races are interesting to look at because, the toss-ups, right? You've got, well, for example, McCaskill. We haven't heard much about McCaskill. McCaskill's in Missouri. She's gone from being, weeks ago, she was up by a number of points, right? She was up. She was the race was not a toss-up. It leaned in her favor. Donnelly, the challenger there, is now up by an average of somewhere between 3 and 2.5 points. And again, these polls, they tend to favor Democrats. They tend to not sample the voters that may end up showing up in the end to move the needle. And which voters are those going to be? Those are the voters that every day that this Kavanaugh thing stalls and we find out more and more about what lying sacks of bags these women are that are coming forward, politically motivated, being used by the Democrats in the Senate and the media. I don't know. I think the longer that this goes, the worse it becomes for the Democrats because they, ideally, these people who are in vulnerable states, they want to get this Kavanaugh thing behind them. Do you think Manchin right now, first of all, Manchin and any Democrat who is in a red state, who's up for re-election, you think he wants this Kavanaugh vote to happen today? No, because he doesn't want it happening today or ever, but he doesn't have a choice. He's going to be forced by Senate leadership to make the vote, to go on the record. So if that's the case, if you were Manchin, would you want to have the vote today or would you have won it 3 months ago? That's the real story. You know, it may actually be that there was a certain amount of brilliance in terms of timing. Who controlled the timing? Does anybody know this? Who controlled the timing of this? Well, of course, the Senate Majority Leader, but even before that, it was when Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, retired. And Justice Kennedy, I am certain, because the rumors were out for a while that he was considering retirement. The timing of his retirement could very well have been designed that this process be up against the midterm. And being up against the midterm here favors the Republicans, especially because you've got these you've got these red state Democrats who cannot, Manchin cannot vote against, there's no way he can vote against Kavanaugh, because if he does, his voters in his state, all those Trump voters who like the guy and can somehow square liking Trump and liking Joe Manchin, will burn him to the ground. Those people will all come out, will be re-energized, and will burn him to the ground. One thing I've noticed here, and I'm absolving all of this while I'm on vacation and not necessarily, you know, watching TV every day, but as I'm kind of following the buzz, I am sensing that Trump is just killing it out there. Right? You saw today with unemployment rates the lowest that it's been since 1969. Economic indicators all very good. Trump is out there. He is. Where was he last night? He just did a great rally. I saw a little clip of it. I mean, he is out there. He is energizing the voters. He's doing exactly what he did leading up to 2016. All I'm hearing in the press is blue wave, blue wave. And I keep thinking to myself, it's not blue wave, it's blue bubble. These people are so in their own world, they don't get it. They don't get that the right has been re-energized. That the Trump Republicans, the Bush Republicans, right, the pescatarian Republicans, the libertarians, they're all united in outrage at the Democrats for what they did to Kavanaugh. The Democrats are the biggest bunch of dumb A-money monies I have ever seen. Politically, this thing was so stupid. And the Democrats continue to overplay their hand and do stupid things because they are absolutely deranged in their loathing of Donald Trump. Obsessed with abortion and Roe v. Wade as some, I don't know, gospel issue to them. And so they placed everything, put all of their eggies in one little basket, which was take down Kavanaugh. And when they couldn't do it legitimately, they began to play dirty. And when they started getting caught, what happened? They doubled down on it. Now earlier, and I didn't get to this right away, hold on, pulling it up here in real time, is a letter. Is a letter that Chuck Grassley had sent to Dr. Ford's attorneys. Now, let me tell you, this is where I think this is going to go. So in the letter, he is requesting key pieces of evidence. He writes, but you have repeatedly refused to produce this evidence to the Senate. In doing so, you are preventing the Senate from considering the evidence most crucial to Dr. Ford. This is October 4th, so that was yesterday. I urge you once again now, for the third time in writing, to turn over the therapy notes, polygraph materials, and communications with the Washington Post that Dr. Ford has relied upon as evidence. In addition, and listen to this, in addition to the evidence I requested in my earlier letter, in light of recently uncovered information, please turn over records and descriptions of direct or indirect communications between Dr. Ford or her representatives, meaning her elected representatives, and any of the following. One, U.S. senators or their staffs, particularly the offices of Senator Feinstein and Hirono, other than your communications with me and my staff in preparation for the hearing. And then also Leland Kayser, Mark Judge, the other witnesses that she may have contacted. This is where the Republicans are going. They are going to get at the dirty tricks the Democrats played. What's witness tampering? Have you heard of that? It's a felony. And they are going to take it straight to Dianne Feinstein, straight to Mazie Hirono. And this thing is going to blow up in their faces. You wait and see. And I pray to God that Grassley and the rest of the Republicans in the Senate do not lose their balls going after this, because they have got to see this through. Our republic demands it. What happened to Kavanaugh And I know last week I had a fiery show. What happened to Kavanaugh was wrong. And we need to make sure it doesn't happen again. So I'm going to round out the show today here with that. Very grateful to be here, and thank you for allowing me to wing the show here out on the road. It's always a little more challenging when we don't have all of our equipment. Robbie, thank you for all your help in making this happen. Dr. Audio for maintaining our connection and clarity here. And I will see you next week, and hopefully with a newly sworn-in Justice Brett Kavanaugh of the United States Supreme Court. Have a wonderful day. Happy Friday, happy weekend. Enjoy, and I will talk to you soon. Sam Rojofsky, over and out. Keep on rolling. Whoa.